Hey guys!
Hey!
It's Anna.
It's Shireen.
It's Ethnically Ambiguous.
And this is episode 61.
Oh my god.
Oh my god, you made it this far.
Yes.
Congratulations. So... here's a water, here's a towel.
Thank you so much. This is a less structured episode. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about a few things. We're going to talk about cultural appropriation. We're going to read a query letter that someone sent me that they have questions about a man they dated who has some questionable actions.
Yes. And we'll read another email from a fan in Israel. So it's a pretty good episode. I really enjoyed it. And I hope you do too. Stay tuned. Yes.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Meow.
Meow. It's Shireen.
So,
this is episode 61.
Is
61.
It? Prove it.
Today's going to be a little different. The structure is going to be a little different, but I hope you guys like it anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we're going to get a little bit personal and then a little bit argumentative and a little bit critical. And then we're going to come back and be personal.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, we are. We're going to be argumentative.
I mean, like, maybe we'll not agree on the same thing. You never know. I'm opening the table, you know? I'm devil's advocate is a legit advocate, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
So.
I'm into it.
Yeah. We never know. Maybe we will agree. Maybe we won't agree. No one knows the future!
That's cool.
Except that this is the past, and you're listening to this on Monday, and so technically, we are the future.
We are?
Because they're listening to this in their future. And the future on Monday, whatever September date is, the 24th. Mm. So you're entering our past. We're entering your future. Okay, I'm going to stop. Time is a circle.
Time is a circle.
I'm
back. We weren't wearing our headphones, but I put mine on because I feel like I'm not doing a podcast unless I'm wearing them.
Oh, really? I feel more like laid back without them for some reason.
You don't have to wear them.
Okay, I won't. Because they kind of hurt my head. But,
yeah.
Yeah, how was, before we catch up, we just saw each other last night.
We did.
We did. We were on Reality Bites.
Yes.
We recorded, we weren't on. Yeah. It comes out later, like maybe in a few weeks, but it was really fun. We got really, like, personal. We talked about relationships and dating and all the stuff that I don't talk about here.
Yeah, it's a great show. We had a lot of fun. We get very personal. Shireen gets more personal than I do.
I didn't. I just like let the floodgates open. Like once I get started, I just like didn't stop. I should have reeled it back.
No, it's fine. I was very vulnerable.
But I just think I feel weird talking about that stuff on here for some reason. Maybe because my dad listens. Hi, Dad. But maybe I want to start doing that. Maybe I will have a conversation with my dad eventually and like tell him I'm gonna get real and he has to just be prepared for it.
Your dad listens to every single one?
Yep, and he's a huge fan.
That's wild. I feel like my dad listens periodically for like 10 minutes, and it's just like, oh, I have something else to do.
Well, my dad, I mean, they're coming back from Alaska right now from this cruise, my parents, but usually he has like a 45-minute commute to work. And so I think he...
Oh, where does he work?
We live in like the suburbs of San Diego, or my parents live in the suburbs of San Diego, and he works in Chula Vista, which is near the closer to the border. His office is there.
Oh.
Yeah.
I see. And he owns a store.
He's a business owner. Yeah, he owns a couple of like clothing, like work clothing, Dickies, medical scrub, like all my shoes when I was in high school, middle school were from there. Like my Vans, my Converse. People thought I was really cool. Well, they knew I got my shoes from my dad.
All your scrubs.
Yeah, all my scrubs, all my Dickies. You know.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's cool.
So yeah, but so I think he listens on his commute. I think it makes it easier.
Wow. Yeah.
But I love that he listens. I just want him to be okay. I want him to understand that sometimes I feel the need to censor myself, Baba, and I don't want to feel that anymore, and I will talk to you about this in person.
Yeah. Just go my way. Just say whatever, and then when your parents talk to you, you'd be like, hey, it's a privilege that you get to have this insight into my life.
Yeah.
It's not a right, and you need to treat it with respect.
Yeah.
Because if you want to listen, you could easily be closed off to him and not have a podcast, and they'll never know what's going on with you.
Yeah, that's true.
Most kids don't talk to their parents at all.
Yeah, I think we all, me and my sisters, have a really good relationship with our parents, which I appreciate. But yeah, my parents are so cute. They're in Alaska and for the past like maybe 10 days or something, and for my mom's birthday, and they just keep sending us, we have like a fam text message group, and they keep sending us photos of their journey, and I posted one on my Instagram and their my journey. Twitter, and they're just so adorable wearing their like life vests like after they canoe, and like just like all their stories, and they warm my heart. I love them so much. It really made me happy that they're like exploring and stuff. And then my mom was like, she sent us a photo of my dad, like, and both of them in front of some like lake or something. And she was like, right after this photo was taken, your dad fell out of the canoe. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, I'm definitely my parents' daughter. Like, they're exploring, which I love to do, and they're clumsy as fuck. So there's me.
They fell out of the canoe. That's amazing. Your dad's like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Just like tumbling.
That's cool. I think my dad flew to Salt Lake City today.
Oh, look at us both having our globe-trotting parents.
Him and his best friend and his best friend's wife, they flew to Salt Lake City, and they're going to drive to Telluride, Colorado, for a family friend's wedding.
I need to explore Colorado more.
Yes.
It's so beautiful over there.
They're going to a nice resort. I was invited, but I don't have the energy for anything.
Mm. Even for a resort, that sounds like a relaxing time.
I know, but then I'd have to go to a wedding of someone that I'm whatever.
Weddings do sound exhausting.
Also, weddings are people that you, like, haven't seen in a long time, and you're just trying to be, like, positive for them, and you're like, I don't fucking know anyone here. Yeah. Like, you're just, like, an outlier person. You're on some random table. You're like, hi, how are you? Like, just meeting their other random side friends. It's like, I don't want to do that. I have no energy for that. I've decided
like, you'll never see them in years after
that. And that's it. Like, I don't know. Yeah, it's a whole thing. And they're, like, 24 years old, and it's like, I don't need to see some young-ass girl get married. Also, like, who cares, you know? Like, I've also decided I'm only going to... like close friends' weddings from now on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I will know. I'm not.
Are you invited to a lot?
I get invited to a lot of weddings. I have another close family friend wedding in Baltimore that I can't go to either. And I was like, I get invited to all these weddings. I just can't do it.
Yeah, I get invited to a good amount, not a lot, but like a lot of them are like family friends, and then like friends. But I don't know. You just have to. Pick your poison.
I'm sorry if I'm not part of the wedding party. I'm not going.
Good. Cool.
Joking. Could you imagine?
Yeah. Should we just get into it, I guess? What else should we catch up on? How was the rest of your week? How's keto going?
Oh, you know, I'm like learning. Okay. I found this company called the Low Bread Company. Mm-hmm. Low Carb Bread Company.
Not sponsored.
No, that Ify Wadiwe, host of Nerdificent, who is the keto king.
Oh, really? He's keto?
He's insane about it. He's also just, like, knows everything.
But that's, like, that's the thing. If you're keto, you're either, like, obsessed with it. It's like CrossFit.
Or you're, like, just getting through it like me.
Yeah.
He showed me this company, low-carb bread company that has all these, like, low-carb bread because they make everything with almond flour.
Ooh.
So my package came today. I'm very excited to try some low-carb bread just to get, like, bread back in my life a little. Mm-hmm. Like, not a lot, but... enough where I don't feel like I'm going crazy.
Yeah.
And then Keeping Up With Keto on Instagram sent me a pizza recipe. Cause
nice.
She's an Instagram user that messaged us, and she keeps up with keto, as you know. And and I was looking at her Instagram page, and I was like, holy shit, she's like eating everything. Like, what is this? And she informed me that like there's keto recipes for everything, so I don't need to feel like insane. Like, I can make stuff. And then someone else on Twitter, I'm sorry, I am like... blanking on your name, you sent me a recipe for like these like chocolate peanut or like almond butter fat bombs that were like delicious.
Anything with chocolate and peanut.
Well, it's like cocoa powder. You use that to make it, and that was really cool. So thank you for doing that. So yeah, I'm slowly making it through, like Keeping Up With Keto. I'm sorry I don't know your name. I really should go look at it. I just think of you as Keeping Up With Keto.
We're all handles now.
At Keeping Up With Keto. She sent me a pizza. I was like, please tell me how to make pizza. Yeah. And she sent me a pizza recipe and showed me some other stuff. And it's life-changing, betches. Guess who's eating pizza and eating bread and still keto.
Woohoo!
Keto.
Keto. No, but it is true. I think like even when I went vegan like 10 years ago, everyone was like, what do you eat? And the reality is there are recipes for everything. Even like whatever your dietary restrictions or your preferences are, you can, especially in LA, I think it's just very doable. And I feel really lucky being vegan in LA because I am catered to very well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, vegan, I think, because it's more mainstream.
In LA, though. Like, in any other, like, even Canada, I think, and, like, I think it's, I think I'm very spoiled being vegan in LA because when I went to, like, even Philadelphia, when we went to Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah, everything was vegan in Philadelphia. We only ate vegan in Philadelphia.
That's actually true. I don't know, maybe it is getting more out there. But my point was, like, everyone thinks, like, what do you eat? But in reality, there's, like, options
towns,
for everything.
Like, bigger cities, yeah. It's more common.
I guess when I went to West Virginia, that's a better example. When I went to West Virginia to visit my family a couple years
ago. They were like,
lamb
only.
They're just like, this is a burger joint. Like, yeah. So.
This is a burger joint.
Yeshy. Yeah, I don't know. I like being vegan, though. And yeshy. I think you just do what makes you feel good. So if you feel good, you keep doing it.
If you feel good, you sell your body.
Oh, what?
Just joking. I don't know. I'm pro sex workers. I'm very pos that. I've
I mean,
decided.
Yeah. You do what you want to do. You're in control of your body, which is kind of what I want to get into a little bit. Is your body? Okay. Now both me and Anna,
take it away, sister.
Both Anna and I.
That's my new
sorry,
thing, by the way.
Incorrect.
I'm gonna start saying "take it away, sister" too.
Every time.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
So take it away, sister.
Thank you. Both Anna and I have tattoos in our parents' language. My native tongue. Anna's native tongue. Mine's in Arabic, yours in Farsi. What's your Farsi tattoo?
Oh, well, the one I have on my thumb is my cousin's name.
Okay.
Arash, because he passed away when he was young and he was my favorite cousin.
Okay. My tattoo is the Arabic word for freedom, hurriye, and it's on my upper forearm on my right side, and it's the exact same. So when the Syrian rebellion first started, like years, like 8 years ago, the rebels... So the rebels were rebelling, and the flag of Syria used to have three stars on it in the middle. And then when the Assad regime took over, one star was taken off because they symbolized, like, liberty and government or whatever. So they took one star off. And I'm paraphrasing, so I apologize if the history is wrong. But the point is, the rebels used the original flag with three stars with the word freedom in Arabic written on the bottom. And so I have that word in the exact same font and everything on my arm. So that's very important to me. I'm bringing this up because I don't know how I feel. I think I know how I feel, but about other people that aren't of our ethnicities getting tattoos in Farsi or Arabic, or if you're Chinese, you're seeing someone with like a Chinese symbol on their body or something. I think it's an interesting conversation to have. And it's very trendy. It's very trendy. Like Kanye West just posted this thing in Farsi that you showed me yesterday. Didn't you?
Yeah, so Kanye West posted like love we are all loved or something in Farsi, and he got it all wrong and weird. I don't know why.
But that's what they do. They get it wrong.
Yeah, and it looked handwritten, so I don't know if someone wrote it for him or what, or if he just like copied it off Google Translate.
Yeah.
And that was weird because I was like, why? What have you ever have you ever acknowledged, like,
Iranians?
Are you someone, are you someone that, like, fights for the rights of Iranians? It was just strange to me. Like, I don't know, he didn't even comment on it. I looked up, there's no news articles referencing it. Like, it was just strange. And there was, like, a giant thread being like, okay, like, he wrote this weird, and people trying to figure out if it's Arabic or Farsi.
Because they're the same letters. It's like, it's like Spanish and English. Like, the same letters are used, but they're arranged differently, and so they're different languages. And then I told a story a couple episodes ago, like several episodes ago, about how Beyonce, a stylist friend of mine, was making a jacket for Beyonce's tour, and she wanted to get this phrase, bad bitch, translated into Arabic for her jacket, and the only translation that would work didn't make any sense, because the word bitch in Arabic is never a good thing. Like, now it's like, you're a boss, but in Arabic it doesn't work that way. And eventually, he told me recently that they, like, they axed the idea, like they didn't end up going with the Arabic. But when he originally told me about it, I just couldn't help but think, like, you're making this language into something exotic and different and whatever, but you don't do anything for the Arabic cause. You don't do anything for the Middle Eastern cause. It's not like you're vocal about refugees or something.
I could see like a representation angle.
Yeah.
But she would have to like shine some light on it.
Exactly. Like, it's one thing to be like, there's Arabic on my jacket. Also, like, immigrants are welcome, like, and then you go on, but like
a cause for refugees,
yeah.
But like, so there was also this contestant on The Bachelorette. Mm-hmm. His name was Camille. He's Polish, and he had this Arab tattoo on his wrist, or not his wrist, his arm.
Is that his name, Camille?
Yeah, it says Camille the Polish. He had the just in Arabic tattooed Camille the Polish on him, and his name is Camille. It makes no sense. It's stuff like that where you're like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Like, it's not just for you to be like, it looked cool, so yeah. I put my name in my ethnicity. Like, it's very strange when people do stuff like that.
It's really strange because
there's a lack of substance to it.
Yeah. And I feel like the white people in particular that want to get tattoos in Arabic, but then they get, like, scared for their lives when they hear on an airplane or something. Like what is that difference? Like when if you get nervous with a hijabi lady, but then you, like, think Arabic looks cool. I'm not saying those are the same people, but it's, like, just white culture in general in America breeds this, like, fear of the other. And that happens with Arabic. And so when I see celebrities, like, a bunch of celebrities have Arabic tattoos. Zoe Kravitz, Selena Gomez, Angelina Jolie. All of them, by the way, are, like, barely, like, not correctly translated. Like, Selena Gomez's and Zoe Kravitz's. So because Arabic, the phrasing is different. Like, the noun goes before the adjective, and, like, it just doesn't work. So their tattoos don't make grammatical sense in Arabic. And the one person I will give a pass is Angelina Jolie, because at least she's, like, she gives a shit. And she's, like, trying her hardest. She, like, visits refugee camps. She, like, adopted a kid from Syria. And I just love her. So... don't come at me. I love it visually. But I think it's different when you are vocal about a cause and you are trying your hardest to get people their awareness about it. And it's different when you're just like, oh, I just got a tattoo in Arabic. Look how exotic and cultured I am. But then like you just go on with your day. And granted, Selena Gomez and Zoe Kravitz aren't white. They're minorities too.
Yeah.
So... I'm not hating on white people. I'm just hating on people that maybe use it for artistic reasons, because there's a line where it doesn't become...
Looks cool.
Yeah, there's culture appreciation and cultural appropriation, and there's a very thin line there, but I feel like it leans more towards the negative.
Yeah, this kind of made me think about it when Madonna wore that whole like get up at the VMAs when she was doing her like weird...
I didn't know about this until you showed me.
Jackson, was it Michael? Yeah, her Michael Jackson tribute. And she's horrible at tributes, by the way. And she was wearing, I looked this up, and it was, she was wearing clothing of the Amazir people of Morocco. So with like the crown with the horns and all the like jewelry hanging off. And this is basically something that's given to women on their like wedding day by their husbands to wear to be like, I'm a married woman. And then to mm-hmm. also show that they like, it's also a form of like, it's like a form of like almost like money, because if their husband dies, they can like sell all this stuff to like have some cash. So it's like they're wearing literal like, you know, their like means in case anything goes wrong. So she wore all that. I mean, she had, I guess, just been in Morocco. But she doesn't reference it. She doesn't say anything about the people. She doesn't, you know, tell anyone, like, hey, you know, like, look at this culture. Like,
yeah.
It's fascinating, you know? Like, you know, bring some awareness to it. She doesn't really do that. That's, mm-hmm. like, the Madonna style. It's like when she was wearing, like, a niqab on her Instagram.
Yeah.
It's just, like, weird. And she's, like, one of those kind of days or something, like, on her Instagram caption. And you're, like... what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like, that's someone's, literally, they are someone's life
yeah.
in a different place in the world who has to wear that and or chooses to wear that. Yeah. It's like
white girls like Coachella wearing headdresses. Like, those people don't care about Native American rights. They don't care about the culture behind that. They don't care about the struggle and the blood that those people had to endure for them to even be at Coachella.
Yeah, I just feel like if you're going to do something like that, bring awareness to the people. Bring awareness to the culture. Like, show the history. Because that's more interesting to people than seeing you wear some, like, horned crown.
Yeah.
Because people want to know, like, teach people about it.
Yeah.
That's like, the least you could do.
Like, you didn't invent that look. You got it from somewhere. And it's a place that has history. And
you went to the bazaar in Morocco.
Yeah.
Bazaar. That makes me think of the elephant. But the bazaar
in
Morocco. And you bought all this stuff. And then you wore it on a stage. Yeah. And then you did not really acknowledge it at all.
Yeah, I think it's very problematic. It also makes me think of like Gwen Stefani when she had like her Harajuku phase.
Yeah, that was
and just
bad.
Had like
that was like
Japanese slave woman. Like, what was that? Like it really is a fine line. Like, it's a fine line between appreciation and appropriation. Like, you are benefiting from this culture that you're exploiting.
But that's saying early 2000s was, like, a shit show of cultural appropriation. Yeah. Nobody cared.
And then, like, Selena Gomez had, like, some Indian-inspired, like, stage show at one point, and it was very, I don't know, just, like, I just think... And then even Katy Perry had, like, some, like, issues with, like, appropriation, but... In their minds, I really think they're being appreciative and, like, I don't know, like, this is artsy, this is cool, this is exotic. But from everyone else's point of view, it really seems so jarring and, like, just not, just, it doesn't, it's not good. It's not, yeah. And I wanted to get other people's opinions on this. So I posted on my Facebook and my Instagram about how people feel about tattoos that are in other languages or whatever, and I'm gonna get into some of the replies after we take a quick commercial break. Okay, and we're back.
So I said earlier that it was what Madonna wore at the Michael Jackson tribute. I meant the Aretha Franklin tribute, which is the recent VMAs.
Right.
She also did a Michael Jackson one that was really bad.
Point is, she sucks at tributes.
Yeah.
But I did want to get into some replies that people sent to me on Instagram and Facebook, and not on my Twitter, because just follow me on Twitter, please, so it's more active. Thanks. Bye, Shereen White. So one of my friends replied to my Instagram. He's Latino, and he said, I get skeptical and annoyed when I see people having Day of the Dead tattoos on them or sugar skulls. If I see a friend outside of my culture that has one, a good amount of them have no clue what the holiday means, and most of them think it's just Mexican Halloween. Because he says you should learn about the culture, have friends at least from that race as well, and then maybe that would be, like, just show love for it. Basically, what we're trying to say. Especially when you're Arab or Middle Eastern, I think as someone from a culture that's constantly erased in media and entertainment, and you're portrayed as villains, and then you're, like, harassed, and you're killed, and you're seen as, like, a lesser minority in every way, having Arabic or Persian, having that language taken away by someone that's not from that background is, like, I think a little insulting and degrading, and only emphasizes how little people actually care about Middle Easterners. Because they don't care about the people or their lives, they don't see them as worth paying attention to, whether in the news or media. And so what if their language is pretty looking? They still make it and take it theirs. It's just another version of white entitlement. And if you're offended by that, I feel like... I mean, I don't know. I'm sorry. Like, the language wasn't for you. And it was never meant for you. And it's the language of people who are constantly, like, shat upon by people like you. So I guess, like, that's weird to me when I see people parading a language, like my language, on their skin, because it just shows a lack of knowledge and history and a lack of empathy, because unless you're helping us, you're using us. So, yeah.
Hot takes.
And I got a lot of comments on my Facebook, and they're mixed. Like, I have a friend that commented that she has a tattoo in Spanish, even though she's not Spanish and it's not her native tongue, but she loves the culture so deeply, and it meant more to me to have it in that language than because it's like a, I guess it's like a Spanish saying. She's always loved it, but she has been incredibly intimidated about how she has one, and it reminds her that. And it reminds her that people who learn English as a second language struggle, and how stressed they must be about speaking perfectly. And so she says culture is sacred and should be respected, but in her opinion, also shared. And I respect that opinion. Like, yeah, sharing culture, good, like, sweet.
I mean, that's cool. Just learn about it.
Yeah.
Go deeper than you normally would if you're gonna, like,
yeah,
you know, use something of a different culture. Like, understand why it's important.
Yeah.
And its significance.
Don't just get, like, a sugar skull because you think it looks cool. Like, yeah. There's the whole history behind that.
Oh, sugar.
Oh, no.
Sorry, what? I
just triggered you with that word.
Someone say sugar?
Then I had a couple of people say that, like, like they're Chinese, and it's really silly to them that almost always the word love is like not the actual character that they're getting. Like it's just always mistranslated. And but it's also a lot of, like, most people said, like, it's their body and it's their choice and to each their own. But it's also just, knowledge is power, y'all.
Knowledge is power.
And one of the commenters said that a woman she respects a lot started a festival called Yella Punk, and she was inspired to start it when she saw a DJ with a poster in gibberish, which was incorrect Arabic script. He had no ties to the Arabic speaking culture or to the language. He wasn't receptive to her very helpful critique of it, and she tried to explain why it came off as appropriation and not cultural appreciation. And that's how this person feels about tattoos. If you care enough to actually have something on your body, have an understanding of the language and the culture that it's tied to. Otherwise, it's disrespectful. And I agree with that. So, I don't know. I like getting feedback, like, live on my feed. It was fun. So thank you for everyone that responded to me on Instagram or Facebook. It was a treat. And I'm glad you responded and were honest with me.
Mm. Yeah.
Thank you to everyone who responded to Shireen's Instagram, Facebook post.
Yeah, it's Facebook and Instagram. I did it on both. I just think it's helpful to just, like, I had an African-American friend comment that she has a, she has an Eye of Horus tattoo, and she's always wondered if it should be there, because that's not her culture, but it is significant to her. And so there's, people are torn about this kind of thing, and, and then other people are saying that her friend got one because in a different language, because that's the language that it originated from. My friend Lexi said that she mainly thinks it's unnecessary. She has a slew of, and she, this is a person that has, in her opinion, a slew of objectively dumb tattoos, and she doesn't regret any of them. But when she was younger, she thought about getting a tattoo in Greek because she's half Greek. She decided against it because she doesn't speak the language, and she felt sort of misrepresentative. If you're not passionate about a culture, how can you be passionate about a culture if you don't actually know make an effort to know the language or the culture itself? So, I don't know, mixed bag. But I appreciate both sides. I really do. Because sharing culture is great.
It is.
Just appropriating it is where it gets tricky, where it's like edamame hummus or some shit. I don't know.
Mame.
What do you think?
You know, like I said, I think significance matters. You know, like, I don't really like the concept of getting, like, words tattooed on me, even though, like, I have the word poppies tattooed behind my mm-hmm. arm, but I never see it, so is it really there? So, and that was, well, the story of why I have that tattoo is for another time. But, you know, like, I always knew I wanted to get something in Farsi, but I always kind of was like, I don't want to get some stupid
quote, like,
like love, you know? Yeah. And it kind of reached a point where, like, I was like, I want to find something to think about. Somewhere I wanted a tattoo where I, like, think about my cousin. Mm-hmm. And I was going to get a matching one because his name is on my, like, thumb area.
Yeah,
it's not visible. On my thumb, but it's, like, down where my thumb joint is. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that's called.
Your knuckle?
So I was, yeah, like below my knuckle though. Like,
yeah.
It's on my hand. And I want to get a matching one on the other side for his father who died recently. My cousin's father, my uncle. The cousin who died's older brother's handwriting, which mm-hmm. I have, which I've just been postponing. Because like that's like my like real blood.
Yeah.
And I always thought it was very interesting to like draw blood while having their names tattooed on me, because it's like this weird like bloodline thing. I don't know why.
That's,
I always had this like
deep.
Weird
I like that.
Like almost like I'm pulling blood to represent, not pulling blood, but like drawing blood out of myself
mm-hmm.
to, I don't know, something about like hurting yourself. Not even like hurting yourself, but drawing blood is, I guess, the best way to say it. But it's also like genetically their blood as well.
Yeah.
To like find a way to represent them. And that's kind of why I decided to do it. I also, like, you know, I didn't get to know, like, my cousin died when he was 17, and mm-hmm. I never really got, I didn't get to grow up with him.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I mean, I grew up with him to a certain age, and then he was gone, and I never got to see the man he could have became as an mm-hmm. adult, and like now he would have been like 30 or 31, and
it was a it was a suicide, right?
No. That was my aunt.
Oh, sorry. Committed
suicide. Sorry. He died in an explosion.
Oh, wait.
He was playing with fireworks, and one of the fireworks hit the gas heater, and it like blew up half my
uncle's
house. So
it was very tragic. I mean, both would be tragic, but like that's very, it was like a surprise.
It was a sudden, very tragic death that like shook my family. And you know, my uncle, who was never the same after his son died.
Of course not.
And he died 2 years ago. A very sudden cause as well. He had surgery. He was feeling fine, mm-hmm. and he got septic shock and died within a minute, basically.
Holy shit.
Like, it got into his blood and he was gone. Like, nobody saw it coming. He was fine. He had had surgery, had like a gallbladder situation, had surgery, came home, was feeling great, didn't realize that he was going to go into septic shock, was fine, was like, oh, like to his wife, my aunt, like, oh, I'm feeling a little thirsty. I'm going to go to the bathroom. And she was like, oh, let me get you a glass of water. Went to get him a glass of water. He came back from the bathroom, laid down, was dead. And that was it. And nobody knew it was coming. Like, my dad had talked to him that morning, and he was feeling great.
Wow.
So it was like, that's how, like, both of them just had completely sudden deaths that, like, shook the family. Because he was, like, the patriarch of our family. So I think about him to this day, because he was always, like, the greatest uncle.
Aww.
He was, like, really weirdly mob boss. He would always ask me to join him in weird places and give me like weird long like family talks, like, if you ever need anything, you come to me, but in Farsi, because he lived in Iran. He was very intense.
I like that.
But he was also like the tiniest little man.
His name?
Habib.
Abu
Habib.
That's like an Arabic word too. Habib
Hosseini. Yeah.
Well,
he was
beautiful.
A great man, and built a great family and was a great contractor.
Yeah. So that tattoo means a lot to you.
It's deeper than anything. Yeah. Like, it's like my blood, literally.
Yeah, that's how
my
I feel.
Blood
about
was
Arabic
drawn
tattoo.
To make this tattoo happen, and so like that's where I come from.
Yeah, that's how I feel about my Arabic tattoo. Like, regardless of other tattoos that I get, that one is like very sacred to me.
Yeah.
Soraya actually, she was a guest on our
Soraya.
Sorry.
That's how we do it. It's so funny because that's like, that was me like being my parents to me, where you say something and then they correct the pronunciation. Like, it's
with your
Soraya.
Hand too. Like, our hands are like little dumplings, you know, like our fingers are all touching.
Yeah. I just mommed you.
Yeah,
like
you
Iranian mom.
Soraya. Yeah. Sevgati. She's a singer in Night Talks, and she commented on this post. She said that she recently saw a white dude at Neptune's Net, which is a venue, with a tattoo in either Arabic or Farsi, and she felt weird about it. And she says, I feel for us as Middle Eastern people, seeing white guys with tattoos like this makes me think that they have military involvement, and it makes me a little nervous.
Oh, that's an interesting point.
Yeah, and then I responded to her saying, or even just, I said, even just non-military white people or non-white celebs like Selena Gomez or Joey Kravitz and others with Arabic tattoos, I feel like they eroticize it. I meant exoticize, but I said eroticize. But now I mean both. Without doing anything for the Arab cause, which angers me. If you're going to parade my language around on your body, at least show me that you give a shit. And she thumbs that up. So.
Yeah.
But it is interesting because I didn't think about it as a military thing at all.
Yeah, because if they go there and they kind of like blend into the culture, that for some reason makes more sense to me, because you get kind of like ingrained in the culture and the vibe, and you meet the people there and you kind of learn. Like, when you go there for long periods, like, you pick up Arabic.
Yeah.
That makes
more
sense to me.
If it means something to you, and if you're passionate about those people and you're going to help them regardless of where you are, then sure. I mean, all it is just education. And like, I've never heard Selena Gomez or Zoe Kravitz talk anything, or any other celebrity with Arabic tattoos other than Angelina Jolie, talk anything about immigration or refugees or Arabs or Middle Easterners. They use it as just like a accessory. But I do want to ask, your Farsi tattoo, did you go to a Persian person?
No.
It was a white person.
I don't know any Persian.
Yeah, I had a lot of
artists.
Trouble. I wanted this tattoo, the Arabic one, to be by an Arab, but I couldn't find anyone, so I had to like,
you know,
bury.
Where I got this? I was sitting on the beach. I was like, God, fuck. Like, I was at like Venice Beach, and I was like, you know what? I'm gonna fucking do it. And I Googled it, and I like double checked it with my dad. Like, is this the correct Arash way? And he's like, yeah, it looks good. Mm-hmm. And then I just walked to a tattoo place on like Venice Beach, like so shady. Like, just like, hi, can you tattoo this? They're like, sure, $50. And I was like, let's do it.
Yeah.
And that's that. It's like the grimiest way where I was like, fuck it. I'm just going to do it. I got a tattoo on Venice Beach.
I mean, it looks great. But the reason I ask is because I had to really make sure they did this typing or like the letters right, because it was, they were doing it like one of the letters was bigger than the other one, and like they didn't understand the language, so it was harder for her. I think she was a Latina woman, and she did a great job. I like my tattoo a lot, but the point is I couldn't find anyone that could, and maybe I just didn't research enough, and I had it in San Diego, but
It's hard to find people, Middle Eastern people, to do it, because it's like tattoos aren't really accepted.
Yeah.
So you really have to go out of your way to find like an Iranian or Arab person who is also a tattoo artist.
Yeah. And also in Islam, a lot of Muslims think tattoos are forbidden.
Well, in Iran, if you have a tattoo, you can't get like, you have to get a doctor's note that says you're not mentally like insane in order to get like a driver's license or like other sort of like things like that.
But it's also when I, my mom, crazy. I know that's really intense, but there's also a lot of history in Arabic tattooing, and like a lot of like travelers had tattoos, a lot of like the Bedouins and stuff, like there's tattoo culture in the Middle East that's not necessarily Islamic, so I really respect that side of it. I also just think it's just up to your own discretion. Like, you can be Muslim and have a tattoo, and you can be like Christian and gay. Like, it's just like you decide the religion that you want to do, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know why it got me thinking about all this stuff, but I think appropriation is so, I think especially because I'm trying to cast for this short film I'm doing, and I'm looking for a Muslim hijab wearing woman, and
it's hard,
and I can't find one that I like, not like, I just can't find one that matches what I'm going for, and it just made me think, like, I can't even think of anyone in the media that looks like me, that is Arab or anything. And when you have such misrepresentation in your industry, to have like celebrities like having your language on their body, that just makes it feel worse. Like, I don't want you to have Arabic on your body. I want an Arab actress to be like in my vision. Like, I don't know, like, does that make sense? Like, I just think, I don't know, it just frustrates me, because there's also appropriation in other ways, and it, like I don't know, hummus and falafel and whatever, there's like, that's all whitewashed now. Like, falafel stands are huge in New York, but like, do most of the people that get falafels at New York like care about immigration? Like, maybe they do, maybe I'm being really judgy, I don't know, but from my standpoint, it just seems like appropriation to me. Like, hummus hut and pita bread and like whatever, I don't know. Sorry,
hummus hut.
Maybe I'm just getting,
let's go to hummus hut.
Yeah, let's go to hummus hut. Maybe I'm getting sensitive.
Well, they do have that, but... remember in Davis, the pita pit?
Yeah, the pita pit that was owned by a Middle Eastern girl, the guy that was whitey, you know what I mean?
It?
I don't know for sure, but I'm 100% gonna say it.
Okay.
Well,
actually, I'm going to talk about this email because it somewhat feels like...
relevant.
Yeah. So I got this email today, which into my personal email, which I'm always like, is my email public? And it is. I'm an idiot. Who cares? You can all email me. I don't care. Not crazy people. Crazy people, stay out of my mentions. So this girl, Gia, emailed me and she says she was, you know, a fan of the show, which is great. Thank you for listening, Gia. And she kind of had this conundrum, which I'm going to read this email to you guys, because I read it and I was like, oh my God, what the fuck? And I low-key want to invite emails like this. Like, I kind of want to start a mailbag where you guys can ask us for like weird like culture advice of like how to deal with certain things.
And I really love reading your guys' emails.
We'll give you potential advice or give you bad advice. We'll see.
Yeah.
So this Gia had a very mind-bending experience recently. So she says, I had been seeing this guy I met on Tinder for a few weeks and things were going really well. I never really get excited about men, especially so soon, but I was so enthralled with this guy from the beginning. He was handsome, sweet, a good listener, gentle. He said he had dropped out of a training to be a Navy SEAL after a shoulder injury and was now pursuing a medical degree. I felt the whole thing was pretty solid, especially once my coworkers met him and enjoyed getting to know him. Then, as things were heating up, he cancels a date because he has a fever and severe abdominal pain. He ends up in the hospital with what we thought was an appendicitis. Later, he told me he had shrapnel in his body that had broken out of its scar tissue and had become infected. Seeing as he wasn't a World War II veteran, I was very confused, yet was still very concerned. We met up a few days later when he was feeling better to have dinner. I was expecting that perhaps something had gone wrong when he was in training for the Navy, or maybe a hunting accident. Turns out, here's the shocker, turns out he flew to Iraq himself, no military or government backing, to help fight ISIS alongside Kurdish soldiers. He said he'd go again if the opportunity came up. And I know, that's so absurd.
Yeah.
And then,
yep.
And then yep. She goes on to say, I had an inside of body experience because I suddenly felt trapped in my own skin and felt so very far away from him, even though he was just a few feet in front of me while we had a candlelit dinner. I can't help but laugh at the absurdity of the moment now, but was lost in a sort of grief because everything my body told me that this boy was not right for me and potentially dangerous. He wanted to keep seeing me, but I broke it off with him because I couldn't wrap my mind around the idea of a white guy from Colorado running off as a volunteer soldier to such a volatile area of the world without doing a proper moral or social conflicts check. I definitely think that Kurds deserve freedom and human rights, but something about this guy felt so wrong. Or about what this guy did felt so wrong. I can't quite explain why I reacted so strongly to the news that night. I couldn't quite articulate a response to why what he did or thought was not quite a healthy perspective. So she said she wants our advice on what this guy did. She asks, do you think that volunteer soldiers like this Tinder soldier, which is my favorite thing, are beneficial to the Middle East conflicts or detrimental? It just seems crazy to me because even seasonal experts have difficulty navigating the conflicts over there. This just seems like it's adding a random variable to an already tense situation. But then again, maybe if our government isn't giving the proper aid, then maybe people who want to fight with the locals is a good thing. I also feel that armed conflicts should be the very last resort after all diplomacy has failed, and I don't think the proper diplomatic efforts have been executed. And she said, I was so confused because I saw such a gentle, reasonable side to him, and then this extreme radical side scared me. I feel I guessed that I was wrong about him, and I could be wrong about so much. I just want more info and different perspectives on a very small yet potent part of American militarism. What do you guys think? So after she sent this email, I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. Please tell me more. So she sent a few more thoughts, and I will get into them after this quick commercial break. Okay, we are back. And before the commercial, I read an email from a woman named Gia who was asking for some advice about a man she met on Tinder who she was dating, who went to Iraq and
on his
by himself, no military crew with him, to fight with the Kurds, if you will. So, you know, I said before, I asked for more information and, you know, she gave it to me. So these are details on the guy to kind of round out who he is, because he's very weirdo. He's weird right now. I mean, let's be real, it doesn't get better. So he had a very disillusioned viewpoint of the world and like the current state of the world, and he kind of like had this very destructive mindset, and he was talking about how he had a friend who wanted to print a 3D gun, and so he was like very into it, and it seemed like he had a very wealthy dad and didn't like seem like he was in want of anything.
He just like needed a hobby, like killing people.
Yeah. And he mentioned meeting soldiers from Hezbollah and how he sympathized with their mission to antagonize Israel and about taking out ISIS. So he was like, he sympathized with Hezbollah, basically. And
which is an extremist group.
Yes. And he said he loved the soldier lifestyle. Like, you live very in the moment. It's all about survival and the bonds you make with the people around you.
Why didn't he ever join the army? Like, that's just like, I don't know.
So Gia is of Sikh faith. Her family is from Punjab, India. So she was raised with this is funny. She quoted Mufasa from Lion King saying, being brave doesn't mean you go looking for trouble, which, you know, I understand. And, you know, she was raised with the value of service, education, equality, and peace. So you only fight if you like last resort. You always try and find a way to be diplomatic and look for the peace first. And I don't know. I this is the most fascinating email I've ever gotten because this is fucking crazy. Like, what if you were dating a guy and this happened?
I just think it is. It goes hand in hand with appropriation because it's almost like fetishizing a culture for your benefit, like for your excitement, for your like. This is a like a like Lawrence of Arabia, like white savior. Like I'm gonna go and like show them the path and it's especially troubling because she's a minority, like an ethnic minority, because he's probably also before she even found that out about him, he was probably already fetishizing her. You know, like he was attracted to her for reasons that she didn't maybe realize.
It's interesting.
And that's really disturbing to me because that's why I get kind of freaked out when someone is like really excited about me being Arab for some reason. Like, and maybe I'm being like too cautious or defensive, but like sometimes it feels like there's expectations that are thrown on you or like, I don't know, like belly dancing and like this, like, I don't know, like.
You do love belly dancing though.
But you know what I mean though.
Yeah.
It does seem like another form of appropriation, but it's just, it's like fetishizing that person and that culture. And she's Indian. It's not like she's even Iraqi or Arab, but for a white guy, maybe it's all related.
Yeah, that's an interesting point of view. I don't know if he's how I see it is he's fetishizing soldier life. So mm-hmm. he is like kind of fetishizing this savior lifestyle where you get to go and you're with your band of brothers and you go and you save people and you fight for what's right. To answer your questions, no. I do not think Middle East like terrorist organizations or even just extremist groups like ISIS and or Hezbollah or mm-hmm. Hamas need white men from America going to try and help them. That is not how not how it should be done.
We don't need a white savior.
No, well, it goes beyond that. It's like you don't know the situation, you don't really know what's going on, and you can't just go over there and think you know it because you were raised in America and you have privilege. Yeah. Because you have money does not mean you can just go join a group and be like, I fight for you now. First of all, they don't need you. And also, you create tensions in situations like that that are not needed. Also, you're not trained.
Yeah.
Like, if you dropped out of your Navy training, like, or Navy SEAL training, you're not the person. You dropped out. You're not someone who's trained to deal with these kind of mm-hmm. things. You know,
you're not a soldier, even though you're trying your hardest to convince yourself you are.
You're just not the person, because even the U.S. shouldn't necessarily get involved in stuff like that. Like, there's cultural things going on there
that you have no
you're not privy
idea.
To.
Yeah.
You're not going to understand. And maybe you think, oh, I'll go learn. But it's like, that's not a situation where you go learn
the
to be a soldier in a Kurdish army. Yeah. Like,
the roots are too deep for you to ever grasp. And yeah, it blows my fucking mind.
And you have every right to have been uncomfortable, because that does imply kind of a more radical.
Yeah.
That's a person who could get into some trouble, and it's not trouble you want to be dragged into.
And it is especially troubling knowing that his dad has money and, like, funding all of this, essentially. Like, he truly just needed a fucking hobby, and he chose maybe the worst one.
Yeah. I don't know. This is a situation that sometimes you really got to separate yourself from people who, even though they've been raised in America and they're this white guy, are so deeply radicalized, because they're clearly getting their opinions.
Yeah.
They're reading something. And you don't want to get caught up in something like that. Also, the situation with ISIS, like, you can't fuck with that.
No.
That is beyond any of us.
Yeah.
Those are people whose morals, for the most part, don't exist and fight for their own.
Yeah.
Like madness.
Whiteys aren't going to save the day. I'm sorry. But it is, I think, coming from someone that is the most privileged person on the planet, like a cis, straight, white guy, a rich white guy, like, it's so, like, the audacity that this man must have to just think he can really do anything. And that's scary. Like, he literally did what he wanted to do. He went and fucking shot at people without having any training for it. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
That's the scariest kind of person who.
Those are most of the fucking mass shooters. Those are most of the people that are shooting up theaters and schools and stuff. They're the most privileged people, which are usually white, straight, cis men.
I guess what I'm trying to say is, if he can go do that, you don't know what other shit you can get him. And that's like an extreme thing. So you don't know what else he's going to get yourself into or get you or himself into. So I agree.
Can you even imagine introducing your parents to him? Like, Jesus Christ, that would be... And he'd already met her coworkers and stuff. And like, he has like two personalities, it seems like.
You know, in the situation in the Middle East, it's not something we Americans can solve.
No.
This is a situation that, which, you know, because of this, it may not be solved for a very long time. The leaders in the Middle East need to do the work. Mm-hmm. They need to step up, which they won't do because, you know, they all have their own prerogatives. And it's not, you know, of course, the U.S. isn't helping because we literally funnel weapons on weapons on weapons on weapons into the Middle East. Yeah. Like, these weapons are basically all coming from us.
Yeah.
Like, we're the ones that have these giant fucking deals with Saudi Arabia, and we don't know what Saudi Arabia is doing with these
and
weapons
Israel.
After a certain point.
Yeah.
Like, these weapons are being funneled out, and the corruption is deep, so it can honestly go anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, whoever's got the right money can get these weapons. Like, it's not even about, like, who's on whose side anymore.
Yeah. It's not right and wrong, it's rich and poor.
Yeah, like, if you got the check and you've got the ability to go and meet the right person, you can get your hands on these weapons. So... this situation's just not going to be solved that easily. Mm-hmm. And a man just going off and being like, I bought a ticket to Iraq, got myself a visa, TTYL, like, that's never a good thing. Like, that's never going to end well. Because one, he's probably going to get himself killed.
Yeah.
Because if you see a white man out there, they don't give a shit about you.
No.
They know your family's not there.
Yeah.
They know you can easily die and just disappear and no one will be able to know where you are. Because it's not like these Kurdish
soldiers.
I really
wonder what his family felt when he left.
I mean, who even knows?
But it is, I mean, like, I do, there is this idea, like, what can I do to help? Like, even me, like, I wish I can go to Syria and make, like, a documentary about what's going on. Like, I just feel like, what can I do to help? But, and I appreciate that maybe in his mind, he thought he was helping a cause and helping the people that needed helping. But the reality is, like, you can't, like, it's just illogical. And I appreciate that he wanted to help in his own way, but it's just problematic.
Also, I do think this is kind of, it's an issue because you send the wrong message and it can create the wrong, like, rumors get started. Like, say ISIS sees a white man fighting for the Kurd soldiers. Mm-hmm. And this is just me creating, like, very broad generalizations for the most part. If an ISIS member sees a white man fighting for the Kurds, they're like, oh, white people are getting involved in this. Maybe, because I don't know why that white guy's there, America's sending people to help the Kurds. And then that gets spread out. It's like these things are...
they have meaning.
They have meaning, and it causes more problems than it's worth.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to make it look like, oh, the U.S. is now supporting the Kurds. Or like, oh, you know, like... because people go and join ISIS. It's a really shitty thing. These are not groups that are to be fucked around with.
Also, our...
this is lethal.
The Middle East is not your fucking playground to, like, test out your soldier dreams on. You know what I mean?
It's bad.
Not a video game. It's not... It's a country. It's history. It's people's families. Like, yeah.
And these are long-standing... like, the Kurds have been in an up... you know, there's been a threat of a Kurdish uprising for a very long time because the Kurds have been forever... marginalized.
Yeah.
They are one of the most marginalized groups in the Middle East because no one cares about them. They are basically like the lowest of working class people.
Yeah.
And they're not respected.
Especially in Iraq.
Yeah. They're like treated like just mountain folk. Like they're like, oh, here come the like villagers who have like, you know, I mean, that's terrible, but that's like, that's how they're treated.
Yeah.
Like I've been to Iran where Kurds work for like families and they do all the like grunt work, like that's what they do. Like I've driven to the villages, like deep through where they live. They live in like literally broken down cobblestone homes, while like a mile away there's actual homes.
Wow.
Like it's nothing pretty, and of course there's nothing really we can do about it because it relies on the countries to respect these people and acknowledge them as like, you know, a full person, not just like half a person because they're Kurdish. It's a real problem. And a lot of people don't have the privilege to, like, work their way up or, like, actually even work for a family that treats them with respect and lets them, like, live on their land or, like, live in their home. Like, it's a situation that you can't go... because also, you get to go home at the end of that. Yeah. They don't get to go home. Mm-hmm. They have to continue the fight. So you go and be like, hey, what's up? I'll fight for you guys for a while. Ooh, got hurt. All right, bye. Getting a ticket home. See ya. Hopping on JetBlue.
Yeah, I mean, there's nice no little JetBlue. Vacay.
Yeah. Yeah, like, that's not okay. I don't know. Thank you for sending us this email.
Thank you so much.
It is a very interesting point of view.
Yeah.
And I, like I said, I agree that you should have left him. He's someone who could get into deeper trouble.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know. I hope that helped respond to your situation. Also, we welcome more. We'll do more mailbag stuff like this if you guys send us things. Like,
we love getting your emails.
Our email is ethnicallyambig@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Yeah.
Someone sent this to my, Gia sent this to my email, which, I mean, honestly, if you Google me, you can find my, like, personal email. It's not too hard. Like I said, crazy people, I swear to God, I will block you. You will not get into my emails.
But, no, we really love getting your emails, and asking advice sounds like we know what we're talking about. So.
Which we don't, but things like this we can at least comment on.
There is another email that we want to read out loud, but before we get into that, I just wanted to read this definition of cultural appropriation, because I should have done this earlier, but better late than never. Okay, so there's a magazine called the Kafa magazine, and I want to read this excerpt from their little article that they wrote. They said, hummus, falafel, and knafe, and the hamza hand, which is like the artistic hand that you'd probably recognize, has like an eye in the middle sometimes. They're some of the most common causes of Arab cultural appropriation. Fashion houses are regular culprits, and you only have to spend 5 minutes in one of Paris's quarters to find Israeli hummus and falafel for sale. Hummus and falafel are not Israeli. Cultural appropriation is the adoption of elements from one culture to another by an ill-informed or offensive manner. The adoption and appropriation of symbols, practices, music, or food has a negative effect which belittles, sexualizes, or fetishizes a practice or peoples, blurring and removing the original meaning behind the subject in question. Cultural appropriation is additionally a contextual issue and therefore varies in severity. Paying homage in an educated manner to a culture is never negative, and a positive sign of assimilation and cohesion within an ever-globalized world. To some, there is a blurred line between paying homage and appropriation, resulting in the least offenses of cases being called out in confusion. Non-Arabs partaking in belly dancing should not be attacked as appropriators of Arab culture. Those who partake in those who partake in these dances in a respectful manner should be free to do so until they mockingly dress up in Arab drag, therefore perpetuating a stereotype and a demeaning old age tradition. If not for this logic, all those that practice yoga for health benefits without the hollow chants of Om are also appropriating Indian culture in some way, which is just untrue. And then it goes on to say that Arabic food is regularly appropriated, like hummus and falafel and couscous. And a few examples of the food have been relabeled as Israeli creations, which is absurd and really offensive to me. Such a symbolic piece of resistance in Palestinian history, in Arab history. But anyways, it goes on to say, I just wanted to read that the definition, because I think it really summarizes it up. And I'll put this link in our footnotes and our... in the description of this article or episode, because I think it's really good. And so I just want to read that before we get into one more email. Are you ready?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this email.
Yes, this is an email we got about a week ago. I really appreciate everyone that takes the time to write to us. It's really, I don't know, just knowing that you guys are sitting down and, like, being thoughtful and you guys always, most of the time, you guys always apologize for, like, being so long, but it's really amazing that you guys take this time to write to us. So, this is about episode 58, which is the episode we had with Allison Stevenson. We got her on, she's a comedian and she's a writer, and she talked about being, having an Israeli mother and how she deals with, her mixed identity. And so this person's name is Adi, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name, Adi. She says, "Dear Anna and Shireen, I live in Israel and I am Jewish, and obviously I love you and your podcast. I just wanted to give my perspective on some of the things you discussed on episode 58, just because I think I can maybe answer some of your questions more thoroughly, since unfortunately I have been living here since I was born. For context, I'm 18, female, and just finished high school. but also been going to the university in Tel Aviv for 4 years now, which gives me the opportunity to get to know people from very different parts of Israel. I wanted to mention a few points, so I'll put them into a list right now. Number one, the new commercial. We had talked about a commercial that Anna and I saw for Tel Aviv being like very touristy and fun. She said, the new commercial for Tel Aviv is hilarious just because our government is currently trying and succeeding to make it even more illegal to open supermarkets on Shabbat, Saturday.
It's Shabbat.
I'm sorry. Constantly discriminating against women in positions of power. They keep expanding the power of religious leaders and will not let gay people to get married or have children. So at this time, they want to present themselves and offer the progressive and secular Israel to the world, and they're not letting the citizens keep it intact. Two, the reason why no one talks about the conflict in Israel is sadly because it's just business as usual. Roughly every year, there are times in which you are ought to be scared when riding the bus or the train, because there are now many explosions on public transportation, and the parents won't let you on buses until it cools off. In those times, you will be talking about this in school, and probably one of the kids from your classes has a relative that died from one of the wars, and they will cry and be more scared than the rest, and everyone will practice running into the shelters at home and at school when the alarm goes off, and some of your male teachers will go off to the reserve duty, and many times one of your family members will go too, because it's fucking mandatory. And you'll be so scared that they might not come back. Most won't admit that fear, because it's business as usual, as I said, but it's there. Sometimes your cousins and family who live closer in the area to the border will come and stay at your place, and you will be thrilled to visit them or to have them. When you're abroad while things are heated, you will wake up in the middle of the night thinking you heard an alarm, but it was just a motorcycle passing by your window. Those things are not bad for us, but I think they are still in constant fear, and they also create constant indifference from birth that makes it more difference than we like to admit. I mean, no one here expects this. This will end, and that is really dangerous. Yeah. The sad thing about the conflict is that every Israeli, even the massively right-wingers, know everything that's happening at the border and beyond, but it is just being portrayed as if it's like, what can we do? The Arabs, in parentheses, which, by the way, is how I refer to the Palestinians. They don't even say Palestinians, they say Arabs. She says, nice, right? She says that people say Arabs can't understand anything but force, and we are so small and fragile, we can't have the state of Israel be threatened if we cannot be safe, and we'll have another Holocaust. So, you know, we just have to defend ourselves. And then that's when her quote ends, and she says, and this is ridiculous, but they just can't see how outdated this is, how we are no longer weak and we are no longer the victim. That is the core of the problem with Israel today, and perhaps it has always been this way. We are a nation which was built as a result of a huge collective traumatic experience. We are a people who are united by fear of persecution and nothing else. This is why Zionism is toxic from its roots. This cannot be a basis for a healthy democracy. This is destined to be harmful. I have so much more to say about this to explain how they're implanting this trauma into each generation through so many different things in every age in different ways, but it's just so much more than I could put into writing here. It's deeply rooted in so many people here and just keeps being enforced, and it's heartbreaking. It was really interesting to hear about being scared to be judged by your parent being from Israel. About that, Allison was saying in our episode that she was nervous about saying her mom was Israeli because she didn't want to be judged. And so Adi says, because everyone here is saying that we should be scared because everyone hates us. And I always feel like I'm scared to say I'm from Israel for two different reasons. The first is that the response will be positive, which means I'm talking to a right winger and I don't want their respect. Because that scares the shit out of me. Like, they will find out I hate Bibi, which I think is
Netanyahu.
Yeah. They'll find out I hate Bibi, and what if they find out I'm bisexual? I don't know, but bad people scare me. And if you are enthusiastically supporting the actions of Israel, I'm sorry, but you're a bad person. The second reason is like Allison's, to be associated with the actions of Israel when I hate every part of it and do what I can as a minor, not anymore, but that's recent, to oppose it. And then she goes on to say, this is getting really long. I'm sorry. Also, again, don't apologize. But she says, our podcast is great and so amazing and so important to me. And she also wants to thank us for talking about mental health. And I wish this email is amazing.
Yeah.
so eloquent and so informative. And
I really liked it because it was a perspective from inside mm-hmm. that we don't get very often.
Yeah.
It's like you can really see someone who's a progressive who doesn't care for what her country's doing, but she lives there and she sees it for what it is.
Yeah. And you are not your country.
Yeah.
Like, we are not Trump.
Yeah.
Israelis are not Netanyahu.
Yeah.
You can decide what you believe. And I really love this perspective. And even her email handle, or like when her email comes up on the computer, it's in Hebrew.
Yeah.
Like, it's
amazing. Which I'm not going to lie. When I saw that, I was like, oh, we're in trouble.
Because we get a lot of hate.
Yeah.
And it's nice to know that that there is reason in people, regardless mm-hmm. of where they are. And she sounds so amazing. And I think you're very brave for just existing in that country as a bisexual, as a more left person.
Yeah.
And just keep doing that. Keep being yourself, because that existence is rebellion in itself.
Yeah. It's important.
Yeah.
It's important to exist within that, to just be like a voice of reason yeah. almost. Like, you don't, of course, you don't have to spread anything you don't want. You don't have to talk to anyone you don't want. You don't have to spread your opinions. But just knowing that you're there is comforting, to know more people like you exist.
Yeah.
That you, like, care for the lives of Palestinians and yeah. what you see that it's wrong.
I love that so much. It really just makes me feel better. And even if you don't do anything, even if you don't go to protest or anything, your existence in itself is a quiet rebellion. And yeah. that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So. I'm glad we got to read that. And send us emails!
Yeah. Reach out to us if you want advice, if you want to just throw a query that you've been thinking about and you just want us to discuss it. We're more than open. You know me.
Yeah. Where can they find us?
So you can find us on ethnicallyambiguouspod.com, where our episodes will post. And also, you know, we're on iTunes, and you can see our footnotes on our episode descriptions. You can find us on Twitter at ethnicallyamb, A-M-B. You can find us on Instagram at ethnicallyambig, A-M-B-I-G. You can find me on Twitter at Anna Hosnier, AnnaHosnieh.
And you can find me on Twitter at ShereenY, ShereenWhy, and on Instagram at ShiroHero, ShereroHero. Follow us and keep up with us. We post a lot on Twitter. Even though we're weekly, we like to keep up with you guys, so hit us up.
And please rate and review us. We got a bunch of cool new reviews. Yeah. You people are so nice.
Thank you so much. We'll read them next time. Yeah.
To a review is 5 stars, no less.
No less. If it's less, then
Look out for our Reality Bites podcast episode coming out. We'll shout it out when it's out.
In a couple
out.
Of Let weeks, you
know. Yeah.
But yeah, that's about it. Thanks for listening. I hope you guys enjoyed this unconventional episode. But
yes, we'll get back to our normal ways
eventually,
one day.
Eventually.
So, Trini, goodbye for now.
Goodbye.